Today on Straight Talk Africa, religious tolerance and interfaith solutions in Africa. Since 2012, armed factions in Central Africa have attacked civilians based on their religious beliefs, killing thousands and displacing hundreds of thousands more. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, December 16th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, happy Wednesday to you, Shaka, and hello to you and to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the urgent need for religious tolerance in Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Thanks, Mariama. But first, since the Muslim Seleka rebels overthrew former Central Africa Republic President Francois Bozize in March of 2013, killings by the group triggered the rise of Christian militias known as the Anti-Baraka. Last month, during his visit to the nation, Pope Francis urged the country's working factions to put down their weapons. My colleague Esther Githui Ewart has more.
In November, Pope Francis visited Bangui, the capital of the Central African Republic, with a message of hope and harmony. The pontiff called on the government officials to promote reconciliation, and he urged both sides of the civil war to disarm for the greater good of the war-torn nation's struggling citizens. He also said the harmony of the people is often undermined by the fear of others, of the unfamiliar, and of what is not part of their ethnic or religious group. Beginning in 2014, three CAR religious leaders united to address the growing unrest, and they have been working together tirelessly to restore the social fabric of their country by addressing the root causes of mistrust in remote villages. Archbishop Dieudonne Napalinga is the Catholic Archbishop of Bangui.
The state has ceased to exist. The state is limited mostly to Bangui. The rest of the country is lawless. The school system, the health systems, and other functions that are normally taken over by the state has not been able to prevent the misery and poverty all around Bangui. This misery is affecting mostly the young people. It is the youth. It's 50% young people in my country. They are no longer going to school. They have nothing to do. They are easy targets for militia groups, for rebellion. Many have gone off to join other militia groups. So in Bangui, they dream of something else. That dream is, for many of them, death.
Imam Omar Kobine Layama is the president of the Central African Islamic Community.
We, through this interfaith platform, want to bring a focus back on justice and the importance of justice being sought to help us reach reconciliation. Justice can be a tool for reconciliation and for the development of our country.
Reverend Nicholas Giokoyame is president of the Evangelical Alliance of the Central African Republic and a member of the Association of Evangelicals in Africa.
We represent the people, yes, the people of the Central African Republic. This is a wounded people. This is a tired people. This is an abused people. And they are also disillusioned. We are the spokespeople for people who have no voice, for people who are speechless, for population that does not have weapons but only has words in order to express their anguish.
They speak for those in Central African Republic who simply want to live in peace and have been unable to for years. Nearly a million Central Africans have been displaced, fleeing and caught in the middle of attacks and revenge attacks from mostly Muslim Seleka fighters and largely Christian anti-Balaka armed militants. Thousands of civilians have been killed. According to these religious leaders, what some call a religious struggle is more accurately a power grab by armed military groups in the face of a weak, non-functioning leadership and government institutions. Transitional President Catherine Samba-Panza has no institutional support and is without funds to provide stability or the immediate need for security. French, UN and AU peacekeeping forces are insufficient. However, the religious leaders are united in their reconciliation and peace-building efforts and are calling on the international community to significantly and rapidly increase its efforts to contain what some are calling Africa's forgotten crisis. Esther Githui-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Esther, for that report. Another cleric who is following in the footsteps of the three Central African Republic religious leaders and working with other faith leaders in Nigeria is Imam Muhammad Ashafa, co-director of Interfaith Mediation Center. He joins us via telephone link from the northern Nigerian city of Kaduna. Good evening, Imam Muhammad.
Good evening, our listeners and viewers at the same time.
How are you?
Well, Kaduna, Kaduna is peaceable. Northern Nigeria and the city of Kaduna is peaceable after the unfortunate Shia military conflict that happened in the last 2 days.
I see. We are really very sorry about that. Very briefly, Imam, walk us through the journey that brought you from being a conservative Muslim teacher to someone that is able to work together with your former enemy, a Pastor James Wuye, who happens to be Christian.
I didn't get the question, please. Can you repeat the question again?
Yes, what I was asking you is to walk us through your brief journey about the fact that you used to be, at least from what I have seen, a very conservative Muslim teacher who actually was even in a position of being in a position, in fact, if I may say it, to kill, in the name of religion, someone who belonged to another faith. What inspired you to change so that you can, in fact, even start working with a Christian pastor, James Wuye?
I think there are two important factors. One of the most important factors is the same Quran falling in the hand of the unfortunate, misguided, ill-equipped, and mischievous religious leaders. They misled me as a young man 20 years ago. They promote the language of hate, and they find scriptural texts to justify hate within the scripture of the Holy Quran. Then I hate anybody around me, especially those who doesn't belong to my faith. And this was linked to some historical phenomenon that had to do with colonization, the colonial conquest of northern Nigeria. That was the first important factor that pushed me to hate. Whereas what pushed me to love was meeting the ideal religious leaders who tell me that in the language of the Quran and within the premises of being a Muslim, you can be two, not one. You cannot be a Muslim at the same time be a hater. You cannot be a Muslim and without a forgiving spirit in you. And he gave me references to the life journey of Muhammad in Mecca, Muhammad in Medina, when he has, before he has power and when he has political and all powers in his hand, he never takes vengeance on his enemies and those who persecuted him. So giving me this knowledge, this is a new phenomenon for me, that there is no, you cannot be true Muslims with hating your neighbor, with causing pains and tears to your neighbor. This is not the language of the Quran. And he made it clear in the Quran that anybody who has killed a soul is as he has destroyed humanity together. So you cannot be a Muslim and go to shed the blood. If you do that, you are denying yourself the spiritual reward, the celestial journey that every Muslim who wants to be a Muslim will have.
You have actually been quoted that at some point you actually said that at the end of the day, you have all been stupid, talking about both the Islamic teachers and the Christian teachers in your neighborhood. What exactly did you mean by saying, at the end of the day, you actually had been both stupid?
Recognizing and realizing that within the, initially, I was feeling the feeling that I'm doing a work for God, or hating those who doesn't look like me, who doesn't believe in what I believe in. I thought I was doing a good service to God. Then I recommend to recognize, to realize that the same Islamic teaching does not teach hate. It teaches love. The others are being misled, misguided, manipulated because of the level of my knowledge that is so low. So realizing that, I realize I've been fooled. I realize how stupid I am, that this is the person that the Quran told me to love. Quran told me that the medium of measuring my scale as a good Muslim or bad Muslim is how I relate with my neighbor, especially those who doesn't even look like me, who doesn't believe in what I believe in. So recognizing that, I say, wow, how stupid have I been? All this while I thought I was making a service for God for promoting hatred, whereas the same scripture I depend upon has told me clearly with a true interpretation that the only ticket for me to have the face of God, to have the love of God, is to love my neighbor. God will not measure me with how much time I spend in the mosque, but how much time I was able to relate with the other, redeeming their humanity. That is what makes me look stupid. Secondly, I recognize that if you are able to rehumanize the other, and you have more people around from different persuasion of ideology, of belief, of culture, you live side by side with them in harmony, you become a better human being.
Is it true that among other things, it actually took, for example, your newfound friend and comrade, Pastor James Wuye, to lose an arm, and you to lose two cousins and a spiritual mentor?
Absolutely. This is what happened in the city of Kaduna in 1992, during the Zangon cut-off crisis. The Kaduna city, at that point in time, Kaduna became divided, sharply split into two. Muslims that we used to live side by side in coexistence with our neighbor, the Christian moved southwest of the city, and the Muslim moved north, down part of the city. So the north belonged to the Muslim and the south belonged to the Christians. And my brother, my great teacher, who was in the southern part of the city, was ambushed by James Group. They murdered him and killed two of my cousins. And my group, in revenge for that, we went to attack the places where Pastor James is. At that time, he's a young man, not a pastor. He's a young Christian, overzealous Christian. And then we chop off his hand. My group did.
Do you agree with those who say that if there is no hope, there is no future?
Absolutely. I agree that way. At times, if one even have, what hope do you have? Is it a positive hope or a negative hope? At times, somebody will be hopeful on a negative phenomenon that have a negative consequences, not a positive hope. As you have positive solidarity and negative solidarity, so also hope has to be, what hope do you give people? Those who manipulate our mind, they give us hope. Hope in the future. Hope is to be great, to have something in return. It is because of that people move to violence. And also because of the same hope, many move to the path of peace. But it's having a hope that is realistic, that is as acceptable, a hope that meets the human moral standard, the moral standard of the human family. That is the hope that we should have. If you have that standard hope that meets the moral standard, then I would say hope is the positivity. That moral hope based on the standard of the human family is the key to the future of the human family, is the key to the future of any human being. But when we have a negative hope that tells us to hate, that told us to, for me to succeed, I must humiliate the other, I must execute the other, or I must demonize the other, that hope is hopeless.
Well,
it's negative hope.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally, and on that note, we'll have to stop right there. I'd like to thank the co-director of Interfaith Mediation Center, Imam Muhammad Ashafa, for sharing his insight. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Religious Tolerance or Religious Tolerance. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
The following are some of the identified conditions in several conflict situations that lend themselves to faith-based intervention. Number one, religion is a significant factor in the identity of one or both parts to the conflict. Number two, religious leaders on both sides of the dispute can be mobilized to facilitate peace. Number three, protracted struggles between two major religious traditions can transcend national borders, as has been the case over time with Islam and Christianity.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and welcome back. Now joining us here in our Washington studio are two distinguished guests, the Reverend Aniyedi Okule himself, Executive Director of the Africa Faith and Justice Network, a non-profit organization that educates and advocates for transformation of U.S. policies toward Africa, and Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C. Well, gentlemen, of course, I have to say, frankly, that it is always a pleasure having the opportunity to host the two of you.
Thank you
on
very
Straight
much.
Talk Africa.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Second. Professor. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come back to you immediately. You, the Reverend, of course, Okule, you listened to Imam Muhammad Ashaf. Your reaction to him?
My goodness. I wish I can clone him into a million imams.
Really?
And spread throughout the continent. I listened to him and I was just, in a way, heartbroken, but just delighted to hear all that he said, talking about looking at others first and foremost, mm-hmm. as brothers and sisters rather than believers or non-believers, a message that Pope Francis is preaching over and over again and again, talking about how people exploit religion to propagate hate, yes. and think they are doing something for God when they are actually having the agenda, talking about how people out of ignorance are misinterpreting the holy text and using their own agenda to spread hatred. I like it when he said, that people falling into the misguided hands of religious leaders. Mm-hmm. So it is very heartwarming to listen to him. And so what he's saying is really at the core of religious dialogue and conflict. not just across the continent, but worldwide. And what is it? Let's sit down. Let's reason. You believe something else, I believe something else. That should not be the reason for me to kill you, to demonize you, or to exclude you from participating in life. You know, religion itself is to make us better persons with God and with neighbor. And when religion fails to do that, then it is not providing the guidance that it should, is not providing us what we hold as religious believers. Whether it be Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, whatever we believe, if it is not making us better neighbors, if it is not promoting the issues of justice and promoting your rights to exist and my rights, then it is very well misguided, as I'm quoting the word he used here, misguided religious leaders. So I want to say it's very heartwarming to listen to him.
Professor Nyang, do you agree with Reverend Okule and, of course, Imam Muhammad Ashafa, or do you have some differences?
No, I don't disagree with either of them because I know them personally and I know they are committed. They are not just echo chambers of any religious tradition to satisfy their believers. They are just speaking as human beings. Father Okure is known to me and I know that he is very committed to Catholicism and Christianity, and he is a human being and he is allowing his humanity to be everywhere he goes. I know the Imam, Dr. Asaf, came to my office with his colleague. I know them, and I saw them at the Nigerian embassy where they spoke. They are serious people. We need people who are serious. When you are in interfaith dialogue, and I have been arguing this all over the world, you dialogue not to dilute your religion, but to dilate on the point of convergence and divergence. The people who use religion for political purposes, of course, have their own hidden agenda. People who can use religion to settle scores because of their personal ambition, they can do it. People I know who are committed to interfaith dialogue try to make sure that their teachings are captured in human flesh through peaceful interaction. And that's what the Pope was saying to those people in Central Africa. I know some imams here who are Americans who were there. People don't know what they were doing. They were trying to build fences for peace.
Very interesting. I know, of course, that religion, some have suggested, that it is perhaps an incredibly amazing spiritual force. But why do people really believe in it so much that they are even willing, for example, as they say, to kill in the name of their belief? Why?
Misguided. Let me come to that word. When people get misguided about what religion and spirituality is about, you know, as you say, you know, religion is a very potent force for any religious believer. You know, it's a very potent force that can gear us to action. Mm-hmm. But it's supposed to gear us to action for good. Is supposed to gear us for action, for transforming ourselves to be better people. It's supposed to gear us to action for transforming the society where peace and justice is established. So when we get totally misguided, and sometimes we bring the elements of culture and human elements of revenge and retaliation and make it part of the religious system, then it can be a formidable, potential, deadly force in making us destroy the very thing we are supposed to build up. So, yeah, religion for anybody, spirituality for anybody is supposed to raise us above those basic human instincts of retaliation. But when we make that basic human instinct, when we make that, you know, into a spiritual element, which is totally misguided, then we are in for a deadly interaction.
Professor Nyang, I've heard some debates over, you know, over decades, sometimes with intellectuals and sometimes, of course, with religious scholars. When they sell something to you and you ask them for evidence or for reason, they say, no, you don't really have to take us there. You merely have to have faith. Why is it that religion is not subjected to the art of reasoning?
Yeah, well, actually, you are raising a very fundamental issue. I think all of us who are here are familiar with this big debate between faith and reason. I think for the African people, since we are here at the Voice of America, the American Republic dealt with this problem of faith and belief. That was one of the reasons why the founding fathers of this United States, when they were going through the problem of amendment to the new constitution, when they were debating the Bill of Rights, there were disagreements in terms of belief. Most of the people who are fighting each other were Christians, but they have different denominations. Mm-hmm. That was why, if you go back and look at the history of faith and belief and the role of the state in the United States, the founding fathers, Madison, had to be put under pressure by his colleagues to look at the narrative when they were looking at the whole question of the Fourth Amendment. The people in Georgia, people in Rhode Island, people in Maryland and other places accepted, but there were people in Boston who were very reluctant to accept because they wanted to make sure. That was why they had to come up with these arrangements in the American tradition. America is fundamentally different from all other people in Europe at that time. America was the first successful republic, and they had to deal with beliefs of human beings. If you go to ancient Rome and Greece, people used to have gods for their towns and cities. But when human beings developed the way they have Christianity, since Augustine, which the father knows very well, and you come back to look at Islam with Muhammad and the Islamic Islam, human beings began to really debate between life and death. And that's where you have violence in human relationships.
What about the differences between what is commonly referred to as the WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, and the Irish Catholics?
No. The thing is this, you see, I think with due respect to all of us, whether you are Jewish, Christians, and Muslim American, and that's one of the reasons why some of our politicians now who are debating are really not willing to look at our own history. So when you have religious bigotry over against one group against the other, you have to be consistent. Let's go to the founding of the Republic. And we know where we have traveled. There was a strong... America was founded by 93% of the Americans were English. They were not British. They were English. And that was one reason why the Catholics were marginalized, Jews were marginalized, and all the other minorities. We have made tremendous progress in this country. All these politicians jumping up and down, they have to know their history and understand how we have traveled to where we are. That was why one of the Jewish scholars who wrote before Kennedy was elected, to be American, you have to be Protestant, Catholic, and Jew. He was a Jewish scholar. Mm-hmm. The Jews have made tremendous progress.
Christianity.
That is one reason why when you come to Anglo-conformity was the order of the day in this country. All of us, that's why when some of the politicians are against Latinos and all the other people, they just have to know the history of prejudice. Like the father is pointing out to you, human beings can use prejudice and vengeance. We have traveled a long way in the United States to where we are now. So people who may be against Muslims, if they know the history of the United States, they will be reminded how they used to feel about the Catholics, the Jews, the Mormons, to the point that these people can run for the presidency. So when there's somebody who's a Seventh-day Adventist, and he is now coming out the way he's talking about, if he knows his own history, he will not say that.
I see.
He'll be quiet.
I see. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan in Tanzania who responded to our question of the week. Justin Moremi in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, writes, I believe that peace and religious tolerance depends on justice, social harmony, and spiritual fulfillment. That means governments need to plan a strategic way forward that includes the joint participation of religious groups and the development of resources through religious programs. Such initiatives can include community leadership training, counseling services, and conflict resolution and peace-building initiatives. It also includes income-generating activities, rural and urban informal sector credit unions, and the provision of basic services.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. You what? And welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Douglas Johnston, president of the International Center on Religion and Diplomacy, says faith-based intervention is increasingly becoming a key factor in violent conflict rather than traditional diplomacy in seeking peace or conflict resolution. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what steps should African governments take to counter extremism and promote religious tolerance? Well, first, I'd like to thank you for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Religious Tolerance or hashtag Religious Tolerance. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Well, let's go to a tweet from Chagulana Shabie, who simply says, we are together. Another tweet, from one of our followers who's writing from Tanzania, Sandy Saul, says, constitution of respective nations should lay out freedom of worship and religious matter and condemn extremism in Sumbawanga in Tanzania. Well, let's now go to comments from our Facebook fans. We'll look at one from David Luburwa Stone from Kampala in Uganda, who writes, Shaka, it's no surprise that in Africa, religious issues are being used to divert people's minds from the real issues. First, we need to look at the poor leadership by our African leaders. And second, we need to think about the increasing trade division of the superpower countries in Africa. Well, Shaka and guests, your take on these comments.
Very interesting, of course, Reverend Mukule yourself. It's all yours. Go for it.
Let's start with the last comment, about government, And I agree with him. If you look at, let's take two cases. The commentary on Central African Republic, for example, was weak government that degenerated into what is happening. But let's go back to a group that is better known to us, Boko Haram, mm-hmm. in Nigeria. It started with dissatisfaction with social and economic issues, mm-hmm. and generated and spiraled out of context. Mm-hmm. So if you look at where people tend to exploit religion for their own advantage, there are some underlying social and economic disaffection mm-hmm. within the community. Mm-hmm. Boko Haram is a clear example.
Boko Haram, if I may mm-hmm. ask you a very simple question, do you see a correlation or is it in fact linked to the period when the people of northern Nigeria mm-hmm. lost political power?
I think it's more than the losing of political power. I know the issue of North-South divide in Nigeria continues to come up every now and then. And yes, it's a real issue. You know, it's an issue in the country.
Politics obviously being about who gets what, when, where, and why.
Okay. Very true. But the case of Boko Haram was not exactly that at the origin. Muhammad Yusuf, who was the leader of Boko Haram, started with some basic disaffection with what was going on in his locality. He's talking about the unemployment. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the mass number of youth who got education but nothing to show for it. Mm-hmm. So when he started Boko Haram, meaning, you know, Western education is an abomination, is bad.
Yeah.
And he could point, he said, look at all these educated people. What have they done, you know? And look at the people who were educated who are not living to the principles of justice and are corrupt and all of that. So he was pointing to very basic problems that existed within the society. Mm-hmm. So he was disaffected. And, of course, not just him. The followers saw what he was saying was true. I mean, true to the extent they were analyzing it. So he had a large followership at one point, almost a quarter of a million followers.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I know the politicians exploited it. This is very true. The politicians, the local politicians, the governor at the time exploited it to make it a North-South divide. But that wasn't the origin of it. So if we go back to some of the basic elements that trigger this group, we will see at the origin financial, economic, social alienation, marginalization in one form or the other. And so when these groups come up, instead of government trying to address what was going on or that legitimate concerns, no matter how the government sees it, when they complain, you know, try to understand where they're coming from rather than use military force to try to suppress what people genuinely feel is happening to them. So, yes, the North-South divide, the loss of power, that has been part of Nigeria's political history. But to the extent that it's erupting into violence, killing people, has been exploited by other means.
I see.
Yeah.
Mariama, please share with us some more, if any, reaction from our audience.
Well, indeed, Shaka, we'll move on to a posting from Omunua Okugbo Igodalo, speaking of Nigeria, and he's writing to us from Abuja in Nigeria, saying that African governments must now realize that their mandate goes beyond mere growing and developing the economy. They must now implement visions which make citizens see one another as brothers and sisters and strive to honor one another. Each citizen must feel that they are loved and protected regardless of their tribal, regional, or religious affiliation. African governments must ensure that their economies are strong enough to take care of the basic needs of the citizens. Well, let's look at another comment, this time from Mohammed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, "The fight against terrorism will not be won until Africa's religious and political leaders hoist the banner of righteousness and summon the moral fortitude needed to stamp out corruption in the conduct of state, church, and private business. Religious leaders must learn to accept criticism, and African politicians cannot simply be the gatekeepers who watch as their countries burn while they figure out a way to remain in power." Well, Shaka, these two comments, they definitely had a lot to say. So you and your guests, your take on this.
Indeed. What about that, Professor Suleiman Nyang?
Yeah, I think what we are hearing from Facebook people are very genuine fears. What Ada Akure was saying, and that is one reason why you cannot talk about religion, we didn't talk about justice. They go together. All the people who presented religion to human beings, we're dealing with materialism on the one hand and spiritualism on the other. What these young people are telling us, we have politicians almost everywhere in the world who know that the most dangerous weapon to deploy is the fear of death among human beings. Because whether you like it or not as a human being, you are here for a short time, you're going to die. There are three locations most people don't pay attention to. If you want fun in this life, you go to the mall. If you want to know people are coming and dying, go to the hospital. If you want to know the people who are jumping up and down and are gone, go to the graveyard. Most people don't want to go to these three areas. You come to Africa today, the African people want to be as developed as everybody else. All the young people like to have iPod and computers like everybody else. But they can only get that if they have leaders. But leaders who are hungry for power and they can use religion are going to use religion to help them generate violence. And become. That's what young people are saying to us. We must learn to know how to create structures. That's what Kwame Nkrumah recognized. One of the reasons why the one-party state was accepted was because the African leaders didn't want people to fight over religion, region, ethnicity, and languages. And they had a one-party state. But they couldn't do it everywhere. They couldn't do it in Nigeria, for example. It's too big. You couldn't have a one-party state. The most important thing for the African leaders to know is that if you want to change the lives of your people, you have to go back to consensusism. Nkrumah was a Catholic. Nyerere was a Catholic. Ofebuanyi, they all accepted the one-party dictatorship. They thought they can create a nation.
Mugabe is a Catholic, too.
Yes.
Robert Gabriel Mugabe.
Mugabe is one, yes. So, but you see, but they were all convinced by the idea that if we are going to create a new society, we have to have conscience. That's what's why Kwame Nkrumah would say, the African mind is the battleground of three competing paradigms: traditional African religion, Arabo-Islamic, and Euro-Western Christianity. Whether you like it or not, my brother can tell you more about it.
Very interesting, because when you think about it, Paul Biya of Cameroon, in fact, happens to be a Catholic.
Yes, he is.
Teodoro Obiang of Equatorial Guinea, the longest-serving African leader or dictator, whichever you choose, is a Catholic. And so is José dos Santos of Angola and many more.
The new president of Tanzania.
He's a Catholic, and the president of Kenya, as a matter of fact, is a Catholic too.
No, but that's what I say, brothers and sisters listening.
Let's go a little bit more.
I'll come back to this.
Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Thanks to you and to our guests for responding to our viewers, listeners, and readers' comments. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel to sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, 2015 was an eventful year for Africa, with historic polls in Nigeria and Burkina Faso, in what observers are saying is a new trend of democracy prevailing, with both elections deemed as the fairest votes in decades. U.S. President Barack Obama also journeyed to his father's homeland of Kenya and delivered a landmark speech at the African Union in Ethiopia. And Pope Francis preached a message of unity in his groundbreaking trip to the continent. A review of the top stories of 2015 and a look ahead to 2016. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today we are talking about the urgent need for religious tolerance in Africa. Our distinguished guests are Reverend Aniedi Okule, Executive Director of the Africa Faith and Justice Network, and Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington, D.C. Well, gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you again together on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us around. Always a pleasure.
You're most welcome.
Thank you very much, Saka. We appreciate the...
You're most welcome. I'm told that I have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, and we do have some, I gather, from the Republic of Uganda. Good evening, Sam. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Ndugu Shaka Sari.
I am hugely terrific, Ndugu Sam. How are you?
I'm very fine, and thank you very much for bringing again my friend Professor Nyang and the Reverend. I straight away go to Professor Nyang. If I may recall, countries in sub-Saharan Africa were divided into Anglophone and Francophone states. Anglophone states were inclined to Protestants, whereas Francophone states were inclined to Catholic, and we have a Muslim religion. Now, what is your message to the diaspora to ensure that we coexist and we keep the norm of interreligious cooperation to ensure that there is a peaceful transition of governments who want to change, and to ensure that the religion goes hand in hand as we have, we believe in God Almighty. We have one God. The Muslims, the Protestants, the Catholics, we all believe in one God. And I would like to take this opportunity to wish the diaspora, VOA, and the panelists a happy Christmas and a merry new year of 2016. Thank you, Shaka.
Thank you very much, Sam. Of course, Sam might also have added, by the way, Professor Nyang, Lusophonic Africa was also largely Catholic.
Yeah, well, you see, in reference to our conversation, if you go back to Kwame Nkrumah and subsequent leaders in Africa, Leopold Senghor from Senegal was the leader of a Muslim country for 20 years and handed over power to a Muslim. Now, I have always argued to my students that the Catholics have given us the best leaders. If you really go back from independence to now, unfortunately, they also gave us our worst leaders, such as Mobutu Sese Seko and the leadership from Equatorial Guinea, etc. and etc.
I gather that I have to go for a break, given that there's no democracy in Studio 52, I guess. I have to go. A reminder that you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. And of course, we'll go for a break and we'll be back.
Once again, here are some of the attributes that religious leaders and institutions can offer in promoting peace and reconciliation. Number one, credibility as a trusted institution. Number two, a respected set of values. Number three, unique leverage for promoting reconciliation among conflict parties, including an ability to rehumanize situations that have become dehumanized over the course of a protracted conflict. Number four, a capability to mobilize community, nation, and international support for a peace process. And number five, a sense of calling that often inspires perseverance in the face of major, otherwise debilitating obstacles.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiu. You what? And I gather that we need to go again to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Tafa from the Republic of Ghana. You're most welcome, Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Chaka.
You did a terrific. How have you been, my brother?
I'm good, Chaka. I'm good.
Good. What is your question, please?
Thank you very much, Chaka. I have a few comments. Not question, actually. Chaka, I want to talk about Ghana, about religious tolerance. If you look at Ghana, Jerry Rawlings happy to be a Catholic. But if you look at those who love Jerry Rawlings most in this country, are all Muslims. Because of the tolerance, because of the religion between here and Muslims. Muslims in Ghana trusted me. If you look at the two parties we have in Ghana here, NDC, MPP. NDC, both president and the vice president are all Christians. And the MPP, flag bearer, is a Christian. And the running mate is a Muslim. But you have the Muslim people voting against MPP, even though the running mate is a Muslim. But the Muslim people voted against them. So that sometimes our attitude as a leader, especially the religious leaders in the country and political leaders, their attitude sometimes also send a signal to the followers. If you have a people who are religious fanatics going into the mosque or churches preaching against one another, then you'll be expecting bad results. But thank God, Ghana, Chaka, we are on course in terms of religious tolerance. All my friends are Christian. I'm proud. I'm a proud Muslim. But all my Christians, my friends are all Christian. I'm grateful for that, Chaka. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you, you too. Let's go to Patrick in Nigeria. Good evening, Patrick. You're most welcome. Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Chaka. Good evening, our guest.
I'm hugely terrific. How are you?
So that's Patrick from Arutuku. You see, Mr. Chaka, let's take what Pope did. When Pope came to Africa, he blessed us. He gave us a papal blessing and anointing. He made us to know that in Africa, religious tolerance is the option for economic and social development in Africa. He taught us a lesson that we should shun what? Religious bigotry. Now, if all of us had listened to all these things and we are not making use of it, that means Pope coming here is because he gave us the best. And that is why I want the religious leaders in Africa, that is the bishops, let the bishops compile what the speeches the Pope made in Africa, make it as a book, and make it possible for everybody to read and digest it and make use of it. It will help us because there is no how you cannot tolerate one another. Now, this thing starts from the home. In a home where you don't interact, and just to say, invite that spirit of oneness and love. My brother, there is no how you can make it move forward. Thank you very much. That's Comrade Max Patrick Okra for here in Nigeria. Thank you very much. Have a blessed day in U.S.
You're most welcome. The Reverend Okoro Tizori was, but I would like to just add one anecdote.
Okay.
What about the recent papal visit to Africa?
Uh-huh.
What kind of impact do you think it had, really? And especially in Central African Republic, where, in fact, you had a referendum on Sunday.
Yeah. I think, you know, the Pope went there to deliver a message. Let us look at each and everyone, each man as a brother, each woman as my sister. He went to deliver a message that exploitation of the weak breeds violence. You know, he said that repeatedly. He delivered a message that we need justice for a peaceful society. In fact, his predecessor, Paul VI, had said repeatedly on the World Day of Peace in a message, he said, if we want peace, let's work for justice. So the Pope repeatedly said that. I'm reminded here of a monk who had, you know, students in the monastery, would-be monk. And he put a question to them and said, how can we tell daylight from darkness? And of course they said, oh, you know, when the cock crows, when there's this, when that. He said, no, no, no. Then he said, the day we can tell daylight from darkness is when you look at another man and see in him your brother,
mm-hmm.
and look at another woman and see in her your sister,
mm-hmm.
then light has dawned. Mm. And so we need to break down these boundaries, whether it be religious, political, national, and learn to see other human beings as brothers and sisters. That is the starting point of dialogue. And to conclude, one person said, I'm trying to remember his name, but the quote is this: an enemy is one whose story we have not yet heard. You know.
So Pope Francis actually said it. You cannot really have peace or enjoy peace unless there is justice. And perhaps accountability.
Yeah, exactly.
Reconciliation.
Absolutely.
So anybody who says, for example, I brought you peace, without justice, the business of justice, accountability, reconciliation,
respect for the rights of others,
it is mere facade.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Absolutely.
Let me come to you, Professor Nyang. Professor Nyang, could you please look at me?
Yeah.
You are an honorable Muslim, an American citizen, a proud son of Africa via the Gambia. You had one of the most prominent Republican presidential contenders, a one married billionaire, Donald Trump, talking about Muslims being bad to come to the United States. Do you think he's a bigot? Or is it perhaps because he seriously thinks it is a very, very compelling issue that affects the vital national security interests of the United States of America?
Yeah, well, when it comes to Donald Trump, I've written about him when one of the young Gambians who is in the army apparently lamented the fact that he made the statement he did. I don't know him personally. When he was about to run, I was in New Mexico. In fact, yesterday I was weeping. I was in the home of one of these colleagues of mine.
Were you at Fort Leavenworth? I know that you sometimes lecture there.
Yeah, no. I have been to Fort Leavenworth. I think with regard to really contextualize this narrative here, for Donald Trump and his group to understand, people like myself have been very much involved in trying to promote what I would call Muslim Occidental optimism with regard to Islam. Catholic intellectuals fought very hard against anti-Catholics in this country. I have read the narrative of the Jewish anti-Semitism in American society. The whole anti-Semitism, that story is well known. What I would tell, 4 points for Donald Trump to hear on light of my conversation
20
here.
Seconds.
One point is the American Muslims are very much part of the American dream. Some of us have been lecturing this over and over again. He is concerned about security, but his concern for security is wrapped in the garment of personal ambition.
10 seconds.
And that is why he would go against Bush. Bush's brother fought against the terrorists, but he's trying to play against Jeb Bush the way Ronald Reagan did to Bush Senior when they were debating. That's why we have metaphors like voodoo economics in those debates. He tried to rally around Reagan. Reagan tried to rally around Reagan narrative. Reagan himself was the one who, at Reykjavik, who told Gorbachev, and Gorbachev is still alive.
Well,
when he said to him,
unfortunately, on that note, my friend, time is not up this ally.
We'll have another time.
Yes, indeed. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, the Reverend Aniedi Okule, Executive Director of the Africa Faith and Justice Network, and Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Zapate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.